Hey there, Star Wars Rebels fans! Welcome to another episode of the Star Wars Rebels After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight, we are covering four episodes again, Season 4, Episodes 5 through 8. Let's not waste any time. Stay tuned!
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV! And now, let the buzz begin!
Whoo, boy!
My ship has sailed!
I know, right?
And we had a light show celebration!
After three and a half seasons, it finally happened!
I think it's less it became canon and more they made it very obvious that it was canon.
Yes.
Like, thank you!
Thank you!
It's Mom and Dad!
It's just one of those things where they always strongly, heavily implied it, but like, okay, never mind. We're going to get into it in just a second. Hey there, Star Wars Rebels fans. Welcome to another episode of the Star Wars Rebels After Show on AfterBuzz TV. We are covering another four episodes tonight. I know that that's not really fair to you guys who watch us week to week, so we do apologize. Hopefully, moving forward, we can sit down and cover however many episodes Disney XD feels like showing in one week.
I was on Lothal riding wolves last week, so I wasn't going to miss that for the world.
Yes, let's not waste any time. To my left, Katie Cullen.
Hi, my buddies. You can follow me all over the social medias at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. And to my left, in a roundabout manner, Megan Salinas.
I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I. And sadly, Joelle Monique had to take the hyperdrive through a freaking Imperial ship all the way back to
our
secret...
She's on, like, Coruscant somewhere, let's be real. She's living it up in the big city.
Hanging out on Secret Rebel Base, just basically putting in the good word for us. It's the Secret Rebels AfterBuzz space station. It's fine. But yeah, you guys can follow her at Joelle Monique. We are going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag ABTVRebels on Twitter. Katie's got you covered on the live chat. And just because I think we forgot to do it the last time we were in studios, if you guys haven't already done so, please go to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you. It is the best way to let our producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on. Again, apologies if we did read this off. It was 2 weeks ago. Love this podcast by X Do Not Play X. Really miss this podcast for the final season. Love hearing their views on each episode and the chopper count. I do feel like we read that, actually, now that I say it out loud. But again, you guys
don't miss us. We're here.
Leave a comment and you will get a shout out on the show. All right. Let's get into it. Let's start with the occupation, which finally we're bringing things back full circle and we're finally going back to Lothal. After a few seasons of being out in space and kind of seeing the bigger picture, we're finally getting back to the nitty-gritty in Lothal and things do not look good.
I love that even just the first moment they get on the planet, the view itself is like, oh, this looks really bad. This looks like someone has set fire to the entire planet. The atmosphere is messed up. The ground is burned. Like, we've been away for a while and things have gone terribly. That's not good. Just a very striking visual change to really hammer that home. And that coupled with the music is just, you don't need words in that moment.
Yeah, no. Just the fact that Ryder's message cut out midway through, and the fact that, like, from orbit, there's just this big scorched thing that you can see from outer space. And, yeah, you know that home will never be the same for poor Ezra.
Oh, yeah. We have... I think for just a moment we need to touch on the little bit of buildup to this, those nice little scenes that we had in The Ghost before we went back to Lothal, partially because clone humor...
Oh my gosh!
This is kind of when we realized that they weren't messing around. Like, we're in the final season. They're going to do all the things they weren't able to do before. They're going to make all the ridiculous jokes they weren't able to do before. Like, we've pulled out all the stops. Let's go. And then, my face scares them. Well, at least it's unique. Like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to dig too deeply into it, but, like, I'm really glad Zeb got some great character moments in these episodes,
yeah,
because I feel like a lot of times he, as a character, gets the short end of the stick. And even though none of these episodes focus solely on him and his role in the crew, I loved that moment. That was hilarious, and it says a lot about him, and it says a lot about Rex.
And just the, clone humor. Like, I'm sure this is the 50th joke that Rex has made about being same face.
Oh no, I'm sure, like, that's what you do to pass the time.
Oh, yeah.
With your fellow clones.
And that little bit with Callus, like, well, she gave it to me. No. Well, I've commanded Star Destroyers.
That's
why she didn't give it to you. And he just kind of faces.
I love that when he sits down, his shoulders just do this little shoulder sag. And it's just like, and that's where we leave the two of them for the next couple episodes. So like, we've kind of got a pin on those members of the team right now, which BT Dubs, we need to get back to Callus soon, show.
I would just watch the side episode of those two sitting in the ship and talking.
What did they talk about?
I would take 22 minutes with commercials with that.
I know. I really want to know. I want all of the awkward silences. I want all of Callus's attempts to break the ice. I want
Rex
that side story.
Giving him,
oh yeah,
just giving him grief because
exactly,
he can.
Exactly. But when we do get back to Lethal, well, first of all, we see a character that we haven't seen in quite some time, and that's Visago. And I only bring it up because he, strangely enough, out of these four episodes, this is like a really good bookend for him because he gets reintroduced in episode five, and then we kind of get a bookend to his character in episode eight.
You helped me. Well, you weren't here to help me, but you helped me anyway, so we're good. Also, I'm taking control of this mining vessel. Like, and that's where we leave you, I guess. Person I had forgotten existed, I'm now happy to see all wrapped up.
I just really appreciated, one, that he didn't give them up, and I do have, I do wonder, and I'll go ahead and present this for debate for those of you in the chat and here at the table. Was he being truthful when he said, I didn't ever try to give you guys up?
I feel like if he had given them up, things would have been a lot worse right off the bat.
I'm just saying that he could have tried, and then the Imperial officers would have been like, yeah, like, we're going to believe that. Nice try, pirate.
I don't know.
Sorry, you don't have any leverage.
You have pigs on your vessel. You're not allowed to have those. Huh.
I'm interested to see what the chat says once we get to that point in the delay. But regardless,
give it a minute.
We get this interesting thing because he thinks later on down the road that they're coming to rescue him, and they're like, oh, hey, buddy. Hey.
I'm not here for you.
Oh my gosh, I don't believe it. You didn't come here to save me. It's fine. But I do like that, again, because this is the final season, they didn't have to bring him back, but it was an intentional callback to season one, and I appreciate it.
We have a few of those.
We have quite a few of those, and we'll get to another one in a minute, because being back on Lethal means a lot of callbacks. And so that was a fun callback, even though he immediately got arrested. I did like how they were like, did he go back for the... He gets
whatever.
What he deserves.
Whatever.
He gets what he deserves if that's the case.
Hashtag priorities.
But one thing that they really notice is how much Lethal has changed. There are Imperial patrols all the time. The Empire basically has an ironclad grip on this planet where they didn't before.
And they have displaced and executed old Joe.
Old Joe!
Like... he's gone.
He's gone. He's dead. Literally gone. Oh, man. So, if that's any indication, like, Ezra heads to the one place he thinks the Empire never felt welcome, and of course, it's now an Imperial bar.
It's like when they take your favorite bar and it gets sold to a new company, a new establishment, and all of a sudden, the food costs twice as much and is half as big, and it's ridiculously hipstery. Like, I liked this bar.
Only, like, straight up evil.
You say that like hipsters aren't evil.
I just thought of it like, it was kind of like in the original Star Wars, stepping into the cantina where it's a wretched hive of scum and villainy. It felt like that. Only more super villainish.
Super pristine.
Like, it felt like walking into a super villain bar. And I don't mean
like
the villain's tavern.
It's like going to the club in Tron Legacy.
Yes! That's a good comparison. I like that.
I don't remember what it's called, and I should.
I don't know. I just know that there are libations for everybody.
Complete with the charismatic person running the joint. Although Zeus had a much better hold on literally everything than... this bartender.
Kind of the important bit is that while they try to make their escape, we see another familiar face, and that's Jai Kell, aka Dante Bosco!
Yes!
And I take a look at him, and just like Ezra's character design has changed because he's grown older, this character design has changed as well. And I looked at him and I was like, I bet you that's Dante Bosco. And sure enough, he's like, oh, don't worry, I'll get these drinks. I'll get this round.
Just that little bit of who's on first with the, I thought you brought the credits. I don't have any credits. I thought you, yeah. Just kind of slapstick your way out of it, folks.
I feel like a lot of season four is basically, like, there's a side plot that's not really getting a lot, that's never outright spoken, but I feel like there's a side plot about Ezra working on his skills as an actor and an improviser.
Oh, yeah, no, he's very much yes and.
Like, that is straight up, he's doing voices all the time. He is improvising sketches. Like, I'm fairly certain that every Friday night on The Ghost, they have a little improv workshop that they do every week because they're like, look, Ezra, you got to work on your improv skills. Kid, your Jedi training is super important, but you know what's even more important?
Being able to lie.
Saying yes and. Because we had that bit where with the satellite dish.
Yeah.
And then in episode four when he's imitating the lizard man. And I have to say.
Is that what I sound like?
I have to say. Ezra, you've come a long way. You've come a long way. Keep working on those workshops, guy.
Well, the satellite, he shouldn't have been doing that in the first place. Like, they should have patched straight through and called it a day.
That's what this they should have done. For. That was him wanting to show off his honed skills. His newly honed vocal skills. Oh, I love that as, like, a B-plot. And I just, in my head, that's what I'm going to keep it as. But yeah, so they sort of try to steal away as their cover sort of gets blown. I do, before they all try to make their escape through this bar, I do want to point out that there's this bit where, Hera and Kanan are also investigating things and they are ducking from Imperial searches as well. And we finally get, like, Kanan finally making some moves.
We like, haven't talked about us in a while. Well, there's kind of a war on. Yeah, but we haven't talked about us in a while.
We've
like,
talked
oh, there's an us.
And they have this moment where they almost kiss. And I yelled out when it didn't happen. And I was just like, freaking
every single time. Well, rule of threes.
Exactly. I will say, though, that at this point, I was very happy because it's like, okay, this is something that they've always strongly hinted at. Because this is the final season, I'm glad that getting closure on this ship is something that we are going to explore. Yes. It's finally, again, no more beating around the bush. Here, have your shipping fodder. And I like that. We'll talk about it a little bit more down the road.
Let's just talk about it now.
All right, let's talk about it now.
We're here. We're doing this. Yes.
This moment comes full circle when we get to the episode of Kindred, which is episode 7.
I think it's 7.
Yeah. Episode 7 here. Because we have this moment where Kanan's being very contemplative and he wants to sit down and actually have that conversation that they didn't get to have when they were trying to make their escape.
We've talked about this. Have they? And then he goes, have we?
And I was like, yes! Thank you, Kanan. You get me.
It's always nice to be validated by something that was written a year ago. At least.
I bet you there were tons of people that were in the writer's room going like, oh, all of the fans are going to be saying, have they though? And that's, that's where we're going to have Kanan. And we do. We get this great moment of Hera going, you know how I feel. And he's like, do I? We've never actually had the conversation.
Like, how do you want to spend your life after the Empire goes down? Well, that's a good question. Hadn't thought about that.
Well, because, I mean, the Empire...
This has been her life.
Disrupted her life from a very young age, and it has never stopped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her mother's gone. She was estranged from her father for a long time. She left her planet to take to the sky. And, yeah, it's just been a nonstop fight ever since. And we know from the prequel novel that Kanan has been head over heels for her. For ages.
Oh, yeah.
For ages. And we... we've been able to, you know, I mean, let's infer. Be real.
We're all kind of Will Smithing her. Yeah. Let's just...
We love Hera. She's the best. But, like, we've always inferred from this series that she loves him back, but that there's been no time for romance. And that's basically what the long and short of it is that, like, Kanan clearly wants a life with her when this is all done.
Provided that everyone survives.
Provided that everyone survives. And now that they've actually kissed...
They're probably gonna die.
I'm really... I mean, I've always been scared for the Jedi in particular, and we've made lots of jokes about doomed prequelitis, but now that they've actually kissed, and I'm like, it's not the series finale. Oh no. Oh no! Am I about to learn a lesson about wanting things? Oh no!
Well, and we heard her name in Rogue One.
But we don't know what happens to her.
So the question is whether or not this goes up to Rogue One or just past it.
I don't know.
We won't know for a while.
Joelle made a comment, you know, during our last recording that we're crashing headfirst into Rogue One, and that's exactly what we're doing. And so it's going to be very... interesting. To kind of get back to the occupation, we get this fantastic sewer fight. I don't want to dwell on it too much, but
it's a thing of wonder basically and glory.
Yeah, Ryder leaves clues for them that they follow with Sabine's symbol, and they follow that to a point where he picks them up and rescues them. This fight was fantastic, and it, like, I remember watching it going, like, seeing them fight off the drones and everything like that. And I was like, this feels like a Star Wars fight.
It really did.
Yeah. Just the close corridor blasters and everything like that. It felt like a Star Wars fight. And I was just like,
And then the solution of, no, go up, guys. Like, it all just felt extremely Star Wars.
I will say, though, that, like, if I was in the middle of a firefight, climbing up the ladder, a ladder is, like, the last thing I want to be doing.
And that's why you put the Jedi last, because they can deflect.
Exactly. Let's move on to the flight of the Defender. We get Thrawn. I miss Thrawn whenever he's not around. But basically, we get this whole plot about Sabine and Ezra trying to steal this new hyperdrive that the Empire is working on. And Thrawn just happens to be there when they're doing their testing.
It's this brand new TIE Defender with better shields and with a hyperdrive of its own. And basically, they've just taken their TIE Defender and turned it up to 11. But it's a prototype, so the last thing they want is for this to go into production, because that's it. That's the ballgame, everybody.
I want to point out two things. One, Thrawn is a freaking terrifying monster. He just stands
things
there.
Things we knew.
He just stands there and holds out a blaster, and, like, he doesn't bother to move when they come in and sweep towards him.
Like, I feel like I've seen that before, but I don't remember where.
I'm sure it's in, like, a Lucas-type movie at some point. Yeah. But I also love that he immediately kind of turns the situation on its head. He's like, well, we were going to do a test run.
Now it's a combat simulation.
And
go get him.
I know we talked about it a lot last season, but when we actually get Thrawn's genius step by step and we see the mental progression that he goes through, he's a genius, but it's nice for the audience to kind of go on that journey with him.
Yeah.
Like, as opposed to him just knowing without any explanation for us.
Yeah. So if Hera were piloting it, then no, our fighters wouldn't have lasted this long. Oh, they disabled the tracker beacon fairly quickly. So yeah, it's Sabine. Sabine's in there.
Yeah, and I love that, like, the conclusion he basically comes to is, wow, if someone as inexperienced as Ezra Bridger can take out three TIE fighters in this new thing, guys, this is a fantastic device. This is going to be great.
So kill that one, and then we'll make more.
And so they crash, they stow away the hyperdrive, and then, guys.
Well, throughout all of this, we've had Follow the Loth Cats.
Yes.
And I love them. They're adorable, and they make actual cat noises. Like, I need a plushy one that makes noises.
They are super cute.
And then my cat was sitting on the sofa next to me while we were watching this, and the Loth Cats start talking, and she just
perks up.
Who is that, and why are they in my house?
But in the distance, we catch glimpses of a Loth Wolf, which a lot of people were wondering whether or not those were going to become canon in Rebels. And it's something that Dave Filoni actually talked about at Fan Expo. So I'm going to go ahead and read off a little bit. In an interview at Fan Expo panel, Star Wars Rebels creator Dave Filoni compared the Loth Wolf with the Bendu, neither good nor bad in terms of the Force. He included the wolf because he because of his love of the creature, but also because of the cultural perception of wolves as guides. He further stated that the Loth Wolf is a natural element of the Force on Lothal. So awesome.
I feel like it's really, really easy to name things on Lothal because you just see what it is and you put Loth in front of it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Loth cats, Loth wolves, Loth buildings, Loth lizards.
I really like that description of them as neither good nor evil, just like the Bendu. They're just an extension of the Force and that happened to be a unique sort of facet of Lothal.
Yeah.
I like that. And we've made lots of jokes about Ezra and his, you know, Beastmaster sort of animal friendship.
He's taking levels in Ranger.
His sort of animal friendship Jedi ability. But that's something that comes in handy in this and in the following episode, Kindred, where basically the Loth Wolf on more than one occasion, for one, I don't know why it knocks people out for some reason.
She's not a Jedi. She doesn't need to be here.
Even
she's probably going to shoot me if she's awake, so I just want to talk to you.
It was really weird. I'm just saying. But for one, these are giant, beautiful wolves, and they look like dire wolves, and they also look like, as you pointed out, the wolves from Princess Mononoke.
Oh, this is some full-on Princess Mononoke. We're going to talk to the godlike white wolf, and then we're going to ride it across the... Yeah, no, seriously. Come on, guys.
So not only does it help Ezra and Sabine get back to base, but when they go back to get the hyperdrive and they're all under attack, more than one of them show up and they manage to get them to safety when otherwise they would have been taken out by this attack that Governor Price called for.
It's like through the mountains and then down these tunnels and then somehow we're in the southern hemisphere? Question mark. Don't know how that happened, but it must have had to do with that weird little mystical star walk we did in the tunnels.
Magic. The Force.
It was Force beautiful, magic. But they're not going to explain it. It just happened.
It's a Jedi spirit quest.
Because, I mean, smash cut to the next episode, and we have a bunch of the native rebels to Lothal also on that side of the planet. Like, did they go back and get them, or... Question mark?
You know what? Whatever. It was a beautiful moment. But we get this moment between Kanan and the Loth Wolf where the Loth Wolf knows him by name and like wants him to take time to look at the cave paintings in here to see the connection that the Loth Wolves have with the Jedi and the Jedi Temple, which... Yeah. And maybe
the fact that there was a big old crack through the painting of the Jedi Temple was like, right. No, this is bad. Bad things are happening.
Wasn't that amazing though?
Oh yeah.
It was beautiful and also super sad.
Yeah. I thought the episode after that was going to be, they're straight up messing with the Jedi Temple. We have to go do a thing. So I was a little surprised that it was strip mining, which strip mining is not a good thing, y'all.
No, not even remotely good. But something else that gets introduced in this episode, Kindred, is not only do we have the kiss, not only do we have more Loth Wolves, but we get introduced to an assassin character. And this guy is an assassin that goes by the name of Rook. And does that sound familiar by any chance, Katie?
I mean, it should, but I'm not firing on all cylinders tonight.
It's one of those, and this was one of those things where the moment his character name was said in the episode, I was like, Thrawn would have a guy, you know, a trusted subordinate that his name sounds just like a chess piece.
I was going to say, named after a chess piece.
That's not how you spell his name. This Rook is spelled differently. For his name, but that is intentional. And
I'm sure.
Much like the and actually there's a little bit of a tidbit because I thought it sounded kind of familiar. There's a scene in the previous season when he's fighting the sparring drones and he uses a code to disarm them, and that code is Rook. I assumed that was a chess piece name. that is actually this guy named Rook, because apparently in the books, Rook was not just an assassin for hire, he was straight up a bodyguard for Thrawn. And so...
Because obviously Thrawn needs that.
Yeah, he was introduced in the Legends novel Heir to the Empire as a bodyguard of General Admiral Thrawn. And it was confirmed at Celebration Orlando that Rook would appear in Star Wars Rebels Season 4. And the voice, you want to guess who did the voice?
Steve Bloom.
Nope. Warwick Davis.
Oh.
So.
I just kind of automatically assume it's Steve Bloom.
Everybody's Steve Bloom. Every third
stormtrooper. Like, the stormtroopers that mean business and have the different voice modulator, that's someone else. But the stormtroopers who chase the annoying Lothcats and wind up, like, halfway across three hills missing all the action, that's Steve Bloom.
But can I just say, I freaking love this guy. I know
he's fun.
He's only gotten a little bit of screen time out of the four episodes that we're covering, but I'm really glad we got introduced to him, and I am super excited to see what they end up doing with him. Especially because I think it's fun, too, that they've brought in this assassin character, because Governor Price and Thrawn have always had, like, this very interesting dynamic of mutual respect. He's, out of, like, all of the people that he works with, he seems to have a lot of respect, by comparison, for Governor Price.
Well, here's the thing. Callus made her look good. There's no one to make her look good now, and so these screw-ups stand out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's the thing, is that one failure after another, she, despite her insistence, oh, no, we've got it handled. No, we can take care of this. No, we've got it. He keeps going, yeah, there's lots of evidence to the contrary.
There's a Miyazaki movie happening on your planet right now, so we need all the backup we can get.
And Governor Price is just like, I don't know who that is. I don't know what that means.
Like, what do you mean? I got nothing. Yeah, no, I do love Ryder basically hanging a lampshade on all of this. How are you people still alive? How does this work? Yeah. Why does this work? And Zeb joining in like, it's getting weird. When it gets weird, that's always a good thing.
Yeah, can we just talk about how delightful it is to have Ryder along with all of our heroes in this handful of episodes? Because one, Clancy Brown is a delight.
Yes. Yes, he is.
Two, it's nice to get the perspective, it's definitely a dire situation on Lothal, but it's also nice to get this oddly optimistic perspective from Ryder, because he knows that their situation is super desperate, and yet he's never angry. He's never throwing a tantrum about how they need to send more help. It's like he really understands the big picture, and he just sort of rolls with the punches, because he's surprised when Ezra says that it's just them, that there are no reinforcements coming. It's just them. And he's just kind of like, oh, it's just you? And Ezra assuring him like, oh, yeah, no, come on. We've done, we've had greater odds. And he's like,
Ryder's been on Lothal for the past couple seasons. He hasn't been watching them take people out and triumph against Thrawn and, like, succeed in all of these crazy, insane missions. He's still, back at the spawn point going, I'm just going to hold the fort here because that's about all I can do. So they come back. They're like, we did this and we did this. And, it's just us and we can handle it. And he's like, I knew you when you were a child.
Well, and it's also just this, like, you say that now. Let's see how you feel after you've been home for a little while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love, like I said, I just love anytime Clancy Brown gets to talk in anything. So it's great.
And just, like I said, lampshading all of this is just...
Having the outsider's perspective, getting dragged along for what is a typical Tuesday for these guys.
Again, with the series going, we are in our final season. Let's just go. Let's just do it. It's always, when it gets weird, that means it's good. I'm like, yeah, we're becoming trope savvy. We're becoming genre savvy now.
Well, I think as much as I love Ryder, I do want to kind of bring up the fact, I think introducing Rook is a very interesting sort of path to take, because something that also sort of seems to continually be happening is the escalation of Thrawn's quarrel with the rebels. And in the last season, we sort of saw him just kind of very, very carefully predicting what they were going to do and being able to even take the defeats that the Empire was doing and have that sort of tie into his grander scheme of figuring out where their main base was to prepare for this gigantic onslaught. Here, and maybe it's just because we keep cutting away, we know that they're up to something super sinister on Lothal. We don't know what that is. We don't know if it's tied in with the Death Star in any way. But it's something that it kind of looks like Thrawn has sort of scaled back his plans a little bit, you know, from the macro to the micro. And I don't necessarily know if that is sort of what they're going for. But that's just, but something that it seems to be focusing on is more and more of how important this team of, how important it is to capture this team of rebels, particularly because of his dynamic with Captain Syndulla and the need to get Sabine and her genius to work the weaponry she created.
I think what we're seeing of Thrawn this season is, we're not seeing as many of the macro plans from him, but we're seeing him focus on what to me are smaller pieces of whatever his macro plan is. He's focusing on weaponry. We're looking at the Duchess. We're looking at the new TIE Destroyer. We're looking at all of TIE Defender. We're going to cross a TIE fighter with a Star Destroyer. We're just going to go. It's going to be great.
You know what that looks like?
A very large TIE fighter.
The Death Star.
Oh, shoot.
Because I was picturing, like, a larger TIE fighter, so I'm like, so a giant circle that shoots lasers.
Happy Monday! Yeah, no, so I don't think the audience is getting to see him focus on the larger plan. I think we're seeing him tying up the details of whatever his larger plan is. I need to know what my particular chess pieces are so I can put them in the correct places in order to obtain X. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen X yet. We don't know if he's working on the Death Star. We don't know if he knows anything about it. We've just seen him making sure smaller pieces are in place. And I'm sure that that will escalate and we'll start seeing larger pieces later on in the season. But for now, we're focusing on certain things, so the Venn diagram overlap with Thrawn is smaller.
I'm looking at, in particular, the moment where Hera uses the hyperdrive to blow through an Imperial ship. On the one hand, it was amazing. On the other hand, you see Thrawn's reaction to it, and it's not super emotional. It's a very
incredible poker face.
It's a very, very subtle reaction. And it's to the point where I can't tell. I'm like, is he infuriated that she got away? Is he like very respectful? Is like, oh, well played, you know, Captain Syndulla. Is that sort of what's going through his head? Or is he sitting here going like, okay, so they have the hyperdrive. She managed to get away. This means this and this and this because they have the logs from the TIE Defender as well. Is it like just going at a million miles per hour? Or is he sitting here going like, I really hate her.
I wonder if he's confident enough in the TIE Defender that he doesn't think they'll be able to find a weakness in it. Or if they do, that it'll take the rebels too long to find it and it'll be mass-produced before then.
Maybe.
I wonder if it wasn't an acceptable loss.
Yeah. I feel like if it wasn't, he probably would have made a bigger deal about it.
Yeah. Because he already made the point of, you know, we have an apprentice Jedi who's not very good at piloting, able to take down our trained pilots in this thing. When we get our trained pilots in this thing, it'll be great. So he's probably thinking that at that point they can mass produce these and they could just wipe out what's left of the Rebel fleet with them. Because the Rebels don't have much.
No.
Supply is an issue.
No, and as we've seen before in this season, and as we see later in Rogue One, the Rebel Alliance is also very reluctant to take on any fights they don't have to.
This is very true.
And this is when we get this really... I freaking love this series, the dynamic between Mon Mothma and Hera Syndulla. Like, these two women of power and command that just... But they're incredibly human, too.
Two very different flavors of strong female character.
Yeah. And again, not the stock strong female character. Yeah. Not, like, devoid of personality or anything like that.
See, that's strong female cardboard cutout. We have strong female characters.
I was really happy when they introduced Mon Mothma as a recurring character in this series. I didn't realize how grateful I would be about it, though. Like, and I didn't realize how consistently we were going to be seeing her, and I'm really glad she's here.
Yeah.
Because it allows for these great character moments between her and Hera, because they have such a great understanding of what it means to lead. Yeah. And the burden that places on their shoulders. Because not only do they have to immediately take care of the people right in front of them and around them, but they also have the bigger picture to worry about, which is why it's taken 4 seasons for her and Kanan to kiss. I'm just saying. But we get this great moment where basically Hera convinces the rest of the council, hey guys, stuff is going down on Lothal. We need to act now. We can't beat around the bush anymore. And surprisingly, it works. For once, the council has decided to gather her troops and go to Lothal.
Well, she walks into a closed-door meeting and basically lays down the law.
They're like, Captain Syndulla, what are you... Okay, you're here now. This is your meeting
you
now,
can't
I guess.
Fight in here. This is the war room.
That was funny the last 50 times you said it.
Senator Organa, we get it. We get it.
We get it. There's no fighting in the war room. Can we move on with the meeting, please? He uses that joke once a week. It's getting really weird.
He's really stressed, okay? It's fine. We're all really stressed.
I'm just...
I can hear you all.
I'm just really glad he stopped with all the dad jokes. I will take the tired reference over his dad jokes any day. It's like I'm not even here.
Well, technically, sir, don't you start.
Anyway.
I did love the detail that we got. Was it called Order 13? Don't remember what the protocol was called, but it was basically any Empire staff, any Empire people on a planet need to evacuate. And that's the precursor to the Death Star moving in.
Yeah. So I guess the question is like, that what the sinister, what's super sinister going on Lothal right now? Is this going to be one of the planets they test the Death Star on? Because
I don't think they give the order to Lothal, though. I think it was just something that they knew existed.
I don't know.
I don't think they've given the order to Lothal, but I think they will.
It's going to be interesting.
I mean, this is a canon that is not afraid to blow up planets. So. Yeah.
And occasionally kill grunts in very gruesome ways. I mean...
None of us are over that beheading, are we? That was season one.
That's actually not what I was referring to. I was actually referring to the little lizard man that was the on the mining ship for the mining guild.
Oh, yeah. No, that was bad.
I know he was just a grunt. He was just like a low level cat. Although it would be interesting if like they have now made like enemies of the mining guild. That would be interesting later on down the line. But
who evidently seem like a bunch of slavers.
Yeah, pretty much.
This looks pretty horrible.
But
that lizard guy though, what a way! Like they teased him getting chopped in half, and then they just wholesale threw him in because still a kid show.
Well,
we're still on Disney. We can't go full Walking Dead on this. Come on, guys.
It was kind of horrible because Ezra absolutely made him slip, and like purposely. Ezra used the power of the Force to like tweak his lightsaber ever so slightly so that this guy would slip banana peel style on his lightsaber and fall to his death. Fall to his fiery, horrifying death.
slaver, though.
Yeah, I mean, he was evil. But he was also oddly, like, there was also oddly a lot of personality there. Like, he was really sad that, like, oh, man, is that what I sound like? Ugh.
Yes, but he's still evil.
Still super evil.
Cool motive, still murder.
I know he was a grunt, but I loved the way they made him move, and I loved the way they made him crawl around in the shadows.
He was a Gollum-style horror movie monster for that scene.
That was incredible. Great, and it was great lighting. It was great. Yeah, and although it was a little predictable with the constant chomp, chomp, chomp thing, we knew where it was going. That didn't change the fact that the scene was, like, still really well executed.
Yeah, that is Chekhov's chomper, I suppose. That is Chekhov's fiery death machine. We're just waiting. You fit the entire machine up on a mantle somewhere.
Jeez. Yeah, for sure. I feel like we've pretty much tackled just about everything in the episode. I want to the Zeonorto on Twitter asked a question. With Kanan and Hera finally sharing a kiss, I have a feeling that this may end up being the last time they speak in person. What do we think? Because Hera's currently at the base and everybody else is still on Lothal.
Well, and Zias B. Lu, whose name I am probably not pronouncing correctly, said a similar thing in chat. That and the fact that Hera and Chopper are on the Rebel base and the rest of the group are not. The stage is set for Rogue One. I just think that this is the end of their respective stories. We still have a good amount of season to get through. Did we get a full 26 for this season?
I don't know about that, but I feel like we have a holiday hiatus.
Chat, let us know if there's been an announcement about how many episodes we get this season. Please tell us, because that would be a good thing to know. I feel like it wouldn't be 13 because we would have burned through this way too quickly. We're on episode 8.
Yeah.
So I feel like we have a full 26, and I feel like we have some time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we covered a lot of ground even in just these 8 episodes.
Yeah. Which is good. And I know that it's not ideal when we have to cover 4 episodes at once.
Holy
but
cow.
Oddly enough, these were oddly bookended, like I said.
Everyone's saying 16 episodes.
16? We're already halfway through the series? Or the season? Oh my god.
Jeez!
Oh. The world comes at you fast, I guess.
And then they keep doing two-parters, which is like, huh?
I know, it's like being on fast forward. Okay, awesome. Well, oh man. Now,
wow. That
took
that
the wind
occurred.
Out of my sails a little bit.
Maybe we are going straight into Rogue One from here. Jeez.
At like full speed ahead, I guess. All right. I guess that just about does it for the episode. Let us go ahead and dive into some predictions.
And chat if there's anything we missed that you want to talk about.
Yes, please feel free to let us know you want to talk about it.
Yeah.
All right. So the name of the next episode is Rebel Assault. Basically, it looks like Hera's leading a charge against Thrawn's forces.
Good.
So, how do we think that's going to go?
Honestly, it could go any which way. I hesitate to put my eggs into any basket. Because knowing this series, it'll just be like, oh, you chose that basket, did you?
You chose poorly.
Well.
I feel like anytime we go up against Thrawn, he goes back and forth between predicting everybody almost perfectly and underestimating them. So it's one of those things where, again, I'm really wondering what the bigger plan for Lothal is. Maybe it is going to be a testing ground for the Death Star. Maybe they've got a completely different type of super weapon that they're concocting there, since they are stripping the planet of its natural resources.
And we also have the Jedi Temple. Like, I refuse to believe that the cave art with a huge crack through it means nothing.
Yeah.
They've got to play into the Jedi Temple somehow.
Yeah, and we still have a lot of sort of gears in the works, you know, a lot of other plot threads that can be considered tied up, I suppose, but are still things that could come back around a little later. So it's going to be interesting. I think that just about does it then. Anything interesting in the chat that we want to touch on?
They're theorizing wildly as well.
It's fun to do that. It's fun to throw spaghetti at the wall.
Yeah.
Well, again, if you guys haven't already done so, please go to iTunes, rate, subscribe, leave a comment. It's the best way to let our producers know you guys like the show that we're putting on.
And keep in mind that iTunes reviews take a few days to show up, so you know you want to review early this week if you want it to show up for next week's show.
Yep.
So's you knows. I guess there's a delay.
I guess that just about does it. Any final thoughts?
Now I'm worried about the future.
I know.
I really did enjoy the crazy levels of Miyazaki that we got in these four episodes, though. Like, this,
it
I appreciated.
Beautiful. I'm very grateful for the shipping fodder. Yes. But now that my ship has been validated, I fear for their lives.
Yeah.
More so than I already did.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that just about does it. Katie, where can people go if they want to find you?
You can follow me all over the social medias, as well on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. All of my shows have come back. Most of them are at 7 p.m. on weekdays, except for this one. So tomorrow we will be here for Robots in Disguise with some special guests, and Wednesdays are Ruby. So yes, join us for that. They're awesome.
Yes, be sure to follow Joelle on her Twitter at Joelle Monique. I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. I am also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz. I write articles for The Movie Chick. That's Chick with two Ks. Be sure to check those out. Be sure to also check out Season 2 of The Shadow, Radio Recreation, where I do the voice of Margot Lane. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you all next Monday.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
May the Force be with you.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.